Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 10.
This is Writing Excuses.
Interview with Chuck Tingle, Breaking the Rules.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
And I'm Howard.
And we are joined today by our special guest, Chuck Tingle, who, let me just say, as we start off, I'm so happy to have you here because love is real.
Ah, well, you don't want to know why I'm happy to be here. Along with that, I think there's some buckaroos that believe we are one in the same, or at least about a decade ago did. I guess this kind of clears it up, unless you have a little soundboard and you're flipping between voice modulations. But I think this is pretty good evidence that we are two separate entities.
That would be a pretty impressive deepfake.
Yeah.
Very talented performer. So
Yes. It's amazing. You're actually my cat. But for readers who are unfamiliar with you, would you mind telling them just a little bit about some of what you write and who you are?
Yes. So I started off self-publishing erotica. I still do that. I have about 350 erotica shorts called Tinglers. And then I recently have signed a deal with Nightfire, which is part of Tor, part of Macmillan, for traditionally published horror novels. And the second of which just came out. And then I just announced that I got four more coming. So, yeah.
That's awesome. This is very, very fantastic. I became aware of you first because of your erotica. When I started seeing that you were going to be doing traditionally published things, the assumption that I made was that it was going to be similar to what you were doing. And the reason that we have you in to talk about Breaking the Rules is that you're path to publishing traditionally is extremely unconventional. But the other thing is that you are ignoring a piece of conventional wisdom, which is that you are supposed to put yourself into a niche and stay in that niche. And if you're going to do two different niches, that you need to have pseudonyms for those.
Yes. Yeah, so, I think pretty much everything about my career has been pretty untraditional, unconventional, mm-hmm. and the writing itself. I think there's a lot of rules that I break, and it is something that I like to talk about because I think there's a lot of buckaroos out there who are creatives, not just writers, but you know, in any sort of medium, who kind of get discouraged if they don't fall into a specific path of kind of traditional creativity. And there's a reason for a lot of those paths. I mean, obviously, like there is a system to getting a publishing deal and everything. But I like to talk about my own journey because, you know, there are some really incredible things that happen if you kind of chart your own path. You know, sometimes that can lead to astonishing failure, and sometimes that can lead to something really beautiful, and not just beautiful, but kind of push mediums forward sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's such an important role out there. And so, you know, I just think it's important to talk about and not discourage those that think, well, that's not how I think, you know, because there's any number of ways to approach art.
Yeah. This is any number of ways to approach art is something that is like a flag that I will ride to. You have my sword. one of the things we're fond of saying here at Writing Excuses is tools, not rules. And yes. I think that that's one of the things when you're talking about art, that there isn't a right way to approach it because we're all coming from a different point.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to pick up on in there too was, you know, Chuck, you mentioned the possibility of astonishing failure, I think is how you put it. And, you know, one of the things I love about you bringing that up immediately is it's such a possibility in any creative endeavor, any artistic endeavor, and learning to not be afraid of that failure, but to also embrace it as an opportunity to learn more and explore and discover what works for you and what doesn't work for you. For me, I think is incredibly important. But you know, to start out almost like on the negative, the downbeat note, almost like what are those moments of failure that you've run into that you found instructive for you in terms of figuring out how you wanted to move forward? What were the paths that made sense to you?
That is a great question, and you've caught me a little bit because I use that. Well, I use that word because you know we're communicating through words. It's you know semantics. We are speaking. We need a word to put value to an idea. But if you were to really like dive deep, and I guess that's what we're doing here, get philosophical about it. I kind of think an art failure doesn't actually exist. I'm using the word to make a point, but in reality, when I look at the process of any career, but I'm just going to talk about my own, anytime, you know, let's say I had a Tingler that came out that I thought was going to do really well and then didn't, failure is the best word for it because we all know what that means. But if you actually look at it, that is literally just, that is a learning opportunity. It is an experience. It is honestly the stuff that life on this timeline is made of. It is so beautiful. In fact, it's equally beautiful to success. So it is, you know, if I'm really going to get in touch with the depths of my feeling about it, I don't think that it exists. It's part of the process. Making great art is not just some trajectory upward into the sky like a rocket. It is a river that flows in various directions, and all of that is important. It's equally important, I think.
To paraphrase badly, Mahatma Gandhi, be the tri-fail cycle you want to see in a good book. You know, it's
absolutely.
We see this in all of the things that we consume as entertainment. We see this idea of a tri-fail cycle. As long as the failure is not something that stops you completely, It can be part of a process that leads to the success that you were aiming for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is a thing that I love is the part of a process. There's a thing in film and television where you only need to get the perfect shot once, right? When you're watching the Muppets, they fling puppets all the time, and there's this outtake reel that I love from Emmett Otter's Jugtown Christmas, Jug Band Christmas, where they need a drum to roll out of a store, and it rolls out of the store and fails so many different times in different hysterically funny ways. This blooper reel is now one of like my very favorite things, but they only needed to get it right once. And I think one of the wonderful things about writing is that you can try something and you don't have to put it out into the world until you have successfully gotten the drum to roll the way you want it to roll. And then even if someone is like, whatever, that drum is not perfect for me, it's like, well, that's fine.
Yes. I also tend to believe that the quote wrong way of the drum to roll is actually more perfect than the quote perfect one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, with art, a lot of the things, like for me, it's not about capturing the perfect story. It's about capturing the truth of the moment that it's written. That's the goal for me. So Tinglers are a perfect example of that. I think of my writing, specifically with Tinglers, as like punk rock writing. If you look at other mediums, if you look at like music, for instance, if you have a song and you play it a little too fast and it's a little out of tune and it's a little sloppy, someone will listen back and say, wow, that's a perfect punk rock song. And if you do that in painting, you can say, oh, that there's something like you really captured the movement or the emotion or something if you don't fix those mistakes. In writing, for whatever reason, I have just found that there's a strictness that I kind of like to push back against. So the mistakes like spelling errors or things in my erotica shorts, I don't even see those as errors. I see them as punk. It is capturing the moment that it was made. A lot of those I write in 24 hours about a news item. And the idea that I should make it seem like it wasn't written in 24 hours just seems silly to me. It's a piece of art and I'm capturing the moment. So I kind of like to look outside of, the conventions of any sort of genre, but specifically, the medium of writing, and think, well, what do these quote mistakes actually mean if we're actually just trying to capture the moment?
Yeah, there's a thing we say in puppetry. I think other places too, but if you can't fix it, feature it.
Oh, beautiful. Yes.
Yeah.
And as a cartoonist, I'm fond of saying that art for art's sake is allowed to take its time. Art for money has to run like it stole something.
That's a great one too.
It's because the mistakes isn't the right word. That first stroke you throw down with a pen has an energy to it, an enthusiasm to it that repeated strokes trying to get it right won't have. And so, boy, sometimes you gotta roll with the first take.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a joke right here about repeated strokes and Tinglers, but...
Oh, there you go. Wait until this episode comes out and you see a fresh Tingler directly referencing writing excuses.
Oh my goodness. Anytime we're talking about things coming out, it's always exciting for me.
Yes.
But before we do anything more on that, I think we're going to take our pause. As I break my co-podcasting.
We're fine. Friend. We're all
you're,
fine.
You're fine. So let's take our pause for a thing of the week.
So going with the theme of this episode of breaking the rules, and as a writing excuses fan myself, I listen all the time. I have yet to hear anyone recommend food. And so I have... I would like to recommend The Frankenstand, which for anyone either living in Los Angeles or visiting Los Angeles, it is a vegan hot dog stand that serves horror-themed hot dogs. So every week you show up and you're not sure what you're going to get. Maybe the mummy with a nice pale Alfredo drizzled across the top, wrapped up. You could get the Swamp Thing, which is more like a chili dog. There's all kinds of things, and it's just really incredible. It's you have to follow them on Instagram to find out where they're going to be. Normally, they are Sundays in front of a horror shop called the Mystic Museum out in the dang valley. And yeah, so my thing of the week is a delicious vegan horror-themed hot dog at the Frankenstand. And their Instagram is The Frankenstein.
As a new resident of Los Angeles, I am excited to go and track this one down and see what they have to offer.
And I am thinking that anyone who is coming on the Writing Excuses cruise that is cruising out of Los Angeles in September is probably also going to make a slight detour to the...
Oh, there you go. You've got to get a haunt dog. That's what they call them. Not hot dogs, haunt dogs.
This is amazing to me.
I've had some haunt dogs that I felt haunted by. So.
Yes.
Writing doesn't have to be a solitary activity. That's why we host in-person retreats and workshops. At the Writing Excuses retreats, you'll get access to classes, one-on-one office hours, critique sessions, and activities to keep you inspired and motivated. Become a more engaging storyteller and learn how to navigate the publishing landscape. As you make meaningful progress on your stories, you'll also build connections with your fellow writers that will last for years to come. Check out our upcoming events at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Everyone's talking about AI these days, right? This season on Compiler, we're diving deep into how AI is reshaping the world we live in. Join us for a new season of Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so as we come back in, I want to talk about some of the rules that you feel like other people get trapped by that you just kind of stomped over with great joy and enthusiasm.
Wow. Well, I feel like there's two categories of that. There is, there are the rules of kind of the business side of things. Mm-hmm. There's the rules of the creative side of things. I think, I mean, part of both of these is that, you know, while I am a masked buckaroo, it's funny, in the introduction, we didn't even mention that, but for those listeners not familiar, I am anonymous and I wear a pink bag over my head. And I would say that, I mean, just to list a few, gosh, well, the way I do book tours is certainly different. Yeah. I don't do readings because they didn't make sense to me. I thought if you're trying to get new readers, what are you going to do? Show up and talk about a book that nobody's read and have spoilers? I found it to be kind of fundamentally broken. So I do my own thing with some shows. I think that in the creative side of things, I kind of disagree with the idea that you should only show, never tell. I think that you need to do both, mm-hmm. which you've actually done an episode on that was pretty wonderful. So any listeners, go back to that one. I also, there's this whole discussion of sort of, should you write with character or plot is the big thing of who's in the driver's seat. And mm-hmm. I think most of the time you're supposed to say character. And I would argue that I like to write message first. I always mm-hmm. put the message mm-hmm. in the driver's seat. Kind of the, what am I delivering to the reader? What is the gift of this? And then I would say probably character second and then plot. So there's all these mm-hmm. things that I come at it with. And to come back to the anonymous thing, many buckaroos have tried to guess my real identity. And over time, I have kind of, you know, I'm breaking down the layers. But I will say for those listening, because I have said this before, that many assume that I am like a writer under a different pen name, but I am not, which I think becomes apparent. I mean, I'm a writer now, but coming into this, I did not know this industry at all, which I guess moves on to the kind of the business side of things, which Dong Wan, my agent, who happens to be here,
shocking coincidence,
experienced firsthand, which is just kind of, you know, I think that my path, I've learned since about the you know, querying and all that stuff, and mm-hmm. Actually, I just I wrote the book, I wrote Camp Damascus, and then I went on Twitter and said, I have a book, and I think I'd like a traditional publisher. Does anyone want to put it out?
Literally just tweeted it out.
Yes, I just tweeted it, and then old McMillan said, I guess that's a good one. Let's do that. That is the short version. It's more entertaining. You could also look at it like I spent, you know, 8 years building my fan base, writing erotica, creating mm-hmm. kind of this whole thing outside of the books itself. I prefer the short version because I think it's funny. But The short version is very fun.
But I have a question for you, which is, you know, you came into this, you're saying that you didn't know much about the publishing industry. And yet years ago, you started writing the Tinglers and putting them up, you know, as self-published. What was the thing that led you to that choice, right? Like when you were starting, before you knew what the rules even were, before you knew that you were breaking any, what was the thing that got you to say, hey, I want to write these, I'm going to put them up here, here's how I'm going to do it. And then, you know, you've developed a very distinctive style since then, of course, but
yes.
What was that inception there?
So I always have, you know, I have been a creator my whole life. I just thought as a medium that the fact that you could self-publish something and kind of work through an idea and it could be out in 24 hours and have an audience, I found to be pretty fascinating and also kind of underused in the sense of like, hey, if this works, I could talk about current events. I could express myself in this way. I would say that there was a sort of a personal kind of version of that and a political version. The mm-hmm. personal version was that, you know, I am on the autism spectrum. So I am neurotypically masking all the time. And the idea of being able to create this art in, like I said, a punk rock way where I said, well, I'm just going kind of, you know, my autism really shows itself in how I organize things. I'm so strict about things. And I thought, well, if I have 24 hours, or I want to write these quickly, I'm not going to have time for that. And it's going to be kind of therapeutic, which it very much ended up being. And then also my queerness as a bisexual buckaroo in a hetero presenting relationship. Actually, I thought, I don't get to express my queerness very often. So there were kind of therapeutic personal reasons that I suspected would be very helpful for me and ended up literally changing my life. So that was a good guess. And then politically speaking, the kind of crux of the idea was that I was always fascinated by conservatives. There was this line a long time ago, kind of the gay marriage line was, well, if we let two buckaroos marry, what's next? Are they going to marry three trees? Are they going to marry their sentient automobile? And I always thought...
they're already marrying their cars.
Yeah, well, there you go. I always thought that kind of slippery slope argument, it was always kind of trotted out like this dystopian landscape. And every time they said it, even back then, I thought, that sounds wonderful. What a utopia. So part of writing Tinglers as like a larger piece of all these books was, what if I just wrote about this world where that conservative nightmare was kind of just let it run wild and show that that's actually more of a utopia than a dystopia? And so those were the two pieces where I thought, writing these quick shorts is going to be an interesting way to do that. Let's see if it can work. And it did.
You got to be the slippery slope you want to see in the world. You know,
it's fascinating to me that your path to publishing, you broke rules. But now we look at, you know, self-pub to trad pub, and that's not really rule breaking so much as it is a road less traveled.
Yes.
25 years ago, when I started putting Schlock Mercenary on the internet, it was the same sort of thing. It was very rule breaking. You know, web comics were this new thing, and now you look at them and everybody knows what that is. Oh, it's a web comic, and so in part, I think some of the pattern here may be that if you break rules, or if you break from a form, if you break from a process and do something in a new way and succeed, the next generation is going to treat that as an accepted form, an accepted pattern, an established way of accomplishing things.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I hope the lesson they can take goes one step beyond that, too, which is, you know, I hope another generation or listeners to this thinking, well, how am I going to break into it? Not only could you say, well, I could trot the path that Chuck did, but the broader idea of I can just come at this from a totally different angle, something that I haven't, that Chuck has never thought of, that, you know, it's like that is the beauty of art right there. And so I would love to encourage others to do that. And I'm so proud that it has kind of worked out into a career that supports itself by kind of trotting this outsider path. Thank you, Dong Wan, for being a part of that.
Thank you for letting me be part of it. You know, in terms of, you spent all that time building your profile, having a career, doing the Tinglers, you know, building that audience. You know, you built what you built outside of the traditional rules of publishing, even outside the rules of like indie publishing, right? Like even on the indie side, people weren't doing what you were doing in terms of this like punk rock methodology of writing, in terms of like doing it in 24 hours, you know, embracing the medium itself as part of what your message is. What then made you pivot again into sort of breaking through all of those rules now into doing something with a traditional publisher, right?
Yes.
Like in terms of making that move, well, why put yourself back in all the boxes that traditional publishing creates and loves to reinforce and loves to build around all of us?
So this is kind of, I guess that's a great question. And why I encourage others, like you can trot the traditional path, but like I said, you can break off. And the one thing I think breaking off really has going for it is that if you get the opportunity, if it resonates with this timeline and means something to Buckaroos, then when you do want to reach more through a traditional means, you can enter that conversation in a completely different way than most are used to, because you come at it as a sort of equal. I wanted to do traditional publishing because I knew that I had the ability and the strength, because of my own situation, that I could come in and make sure I only signed a deal with someone who would also let me do my tinglers, who would listen to exactly what I say and kind of, you know, treat me as sort of like a auteur author almost, where it's, you know, I am very involved in every aspect of it, where I think some other authors might not be, as far as, let's say, cover decisions or edits or things, because at this point in my career, it's like, why would you sign a deal with Chuck Tingle and not want him to write a Chuck Tingle book?
Yep.
So I'm allowed to basically do whatever I want as if I was self-published, but with this massive company behind me, because I've already proven it. And I think there's something with not just with publishing, but with, you know, all types of mediums, where the hopefuls who want to be a career artist almost see it as a lotto ticket. And I think that's a very unfortunate way to look at it, because you're essentially like begging someone to notice for you. Never come to the big record label, the giant film studio, the big five publisher saying, please, please notice me. Come to them as an equal. I always think back to the show American Idol, where everyone was competing for a quote record deal. And it always blew my mind, because I would see it and think, well, what's the deal? What is the record deal? Is it a good one? Is it a bad one? Why are we competing for this nebulous idea that is not a good thing inherently? And I feel like in book publishing too, you see that of like, if I could only get this big five publishing deal, what big five publishing deal? Is it going to be a good one or a bad one?
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the things that you said about coming to the table as an equal is something that that people just don't, they get hung up on the dream, and it's something that you don't have to have a huge platform already to bear in mind that publishers exist to publish things. They do not exist without your work.
Yep. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. You know, it's almost a mentality. It doesn't have to be, you just have to go and be willing, go into it and think, if I don't like this deal, I'll say no, because I'm a great writer, you know, and so few Buckaroos seem to do that.
The way I frame it is, you have to be undeniable, right? Because if you are deniable, they will deny you. Right.
Yes.
And, you know, and part of being undeniable is being willing to walk away from a thing that may be what you've dreamed of, but is on bad terms, or isn't with the right partner, or at the wrong time, right? All of those things, we all of us here know too well, can really derail you in a variety of ways. And so it's not just reaching for a literary agent or a book deal or a opportunity. It has to be the right one. And the way you get the right one is by manufacturing, by creating it, right? Like, playing within the boundaries of how people expect you to behave won't always get you there. I mean, now you have to be respectful. You have to treat people, you know, with courtesy and respect and on the terms that they are requesting for a variety of different reasons. But provided you're living up to civility and treating people like people, you don't have to conform to the expected channels. Like, most of my clients did not come to me through the querying process, right? Most of my clients, in one way or another, didn't end up in the same sort of set of traditional rules that we talk about in terms of how you get a book deal, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, and what publishers are looking for a lot is the thing that Chuck is delivering, which is a book that no one else could have written.
Absolutely.
And I think that when we get hung up in rules, when we get hung up in the, this is the way things are done, what we're doing is that we are putting ourselves into boxes and that we're trimming off the pieces of ourselves that don't fit into those boxes. And those pieces are often the things that make our work the most interesting. When Howard was using the metaphor of, you know, that first initial rough sketch and then you draw over and over and over again, I see early career writers editing themselves out of the story in an effort to meet all of the rules.
Which is why the rawness of the Tinglers works so well, right? You mentioned that you lead with message, not with character or plot. You lead with message, but then you also made the medium itself the message. Like, for you, how is leading with message driving what you choose to work on and how you write and how you publish?
Yes. I have always looked at art as more than more than what's between the, you know, for the example of writing, it's more than just the words in the book. And I think it really drives, I have found authors do not like this, but I'm going to go there. There is a sort of thing of like, well, I just want to write the books. I don't want to have to be a brand. I'm sure you probably have 10 episodes of this dang podcast about it. Fortunately for me, I have always loved that because I don't think that there's a different, I don't think that art ever stops when the medium ends. I think when you reach the last page of the book, the art is in what you dream of that night when you go to bed. It's in what you eat for dinner. I think that the song doesn't end when the track stops. It's everything that you know about that singer. It's everything that you don't know about that singer. It's so this idea of art in a vacuum, I think, is really held on tight by a lot of writers who are thinking, well, I don't want to have to be anything else. And being something else, you know, not being something else, that in itself is a statement. But fortunately for me, I always thought, wow, how many different ways can I find to make art more than just the product, more than just the book? How can I make it everything that's around it? How can I show it's not in a vacuum? And so I just spent a lot of time doing that because I love it. I kind of just got lucky in that, fortunately for me, in an office, they call that branding. For me, I call it art.
I feel like
for me, I call that just being alive.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. I think this is a great opportunity for us to go ahead and move to our homework because otherwise we will be talking for several hours. and Chuck, I think you have some homework for us.
I do have some homework. So whatever your work in progress is, find a section, whether it's a chapter or just a page, and think of the writing rule that you believe is kind of the North Star of sort of not necessarily your personal rule, but the writing at large, the English department would hammer into you. Take that rule, whatever you think may be, and try to rewrite that section either without that rule or doing the opposite, and then look at it and see what change does that make. Is there a version of it where you can use this as a tool, not a rule?
I love that homework. Thank you so much for joining us, Chuck.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. And before I go, I just got to say, it is truly an honor. I came to this, like I said, not knowing anything about writing. And actually, listening to this podcast taught me a lot. So I am so honored to be here. And I love it. So it's really wonderful to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, you all have heard that here. So now you are out of excuses. Go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends.
Your hosts for this episode of Writing Excuses were Dongwon Song, Howard Taylor, and Mary Robinette Kowal, with special guest, Chuck Tingle.
This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates. so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.